If any god told you that you would die tomorrow, or certainly on the day after tomorrow, you would not care much whether it was on the third day or tomorrow, unless you were in the highest degree mean-spirited, for how small is the difference? So think it no great thing to die after as many years as you can name, rather than tomorrow. Think continually how many physicians are dead after so much furrowing their brows over the sick, and how many astrologers after predicting with great pretensions the deaths of others, and how many philosophers after endless discourses on death or immortality, how many heroes after killing thousands, and how many tyrants who have used their power over men's lives with terrible insolence, as if they were immortal, and how many cities are entirely dead, so to speak, Helice and Pompeii and Herculaneum and innumerable others. Add to the reckoning all whom you have known, one after another. One man buries another, and is then laid out dead himself, and another buries him, and all this in but a short time. To conclude, always observe how ephemeral and worthless human things are, and what was yesterday a little mucus, tomorrow will be a mummy or ashes. Pass then through this little space of time conformably to nature, and end your journey in content, just as an olive falls off when it is ripe, blessing nature who produced it, and thanking the tree on which it grew. Be like the promontory against which the waves continually break. It stands firm and tames the fury of the water around it. I am unhappy because this has happened to me. No, say instead, I am happy, though this has happened to me, because I endure it free from pain, neither crushed by the present nor fearing the future. For such a thing as this might have happened to any man, but not every man would have endured it free from pain on such an occasion. Why then is that experience taken to be a misfortune, any more than your ability to endure it is a good fortune? And do you in all cases call that which is not a deviation from man's nature a man's misfortune? And does a thing seem to you to be a deviation from man's nature when it is not contrary to the will of man's nature? Well, you know the will of nature. Will then this that has happened prevent you from being just, magnanimous, temperate, prudent, secure against inconsiderate opinions and falsehood? Will it prevent you from having modesty, freedom, and everything else, by the presence of which man's nature is fulfilled? Remember, too, on every occasion that leads you to vexation, to apply this principle. Not that this is a misfortune, but that to bear it nobly is good fortune. It is a vulgar but still a useful help towards contempt of death to pass in review those who have tenaciously stuck to life. What more, then, have they gained than those who have died early? Certainly they lie in their tombs somewhere at last. Caedicianus, Fabius, Julianus, Lepidus, or anyone else like them, who have carried out many to be buried, and then were carried out themselves. Altogether the interval is small between birth and death, and consider with how much trouble, and in company with what sort of people, and in what a feeble body this interval is laboriously passed. Do not then consider life a thing of any value, for look to the immensity of time behind you, and to the time which is before you, another boundless space. In this infinity, then, what is the difference between him who lives 3 days and him who lives 3 generations? Always run the short way, and the short way is the natural one. Accordingly say and do everything in conformity with the soundest reason. For such a purpose frees a man from trouble and warfare, and all artifice and ostentatious display. Book 5. In the morning, when you feel unwilling to rise, Let this thought be present. I am rising to the work of a human being. Why then am I dissatisfied if I am going to do the things for which I exist, and for which I was brought into the world? Or have I been made for this, to lie in the bedclothes and keep myself warm? But this is more pleasant. Do you exist then for the sake of pleasure rather than action or exertion? Do you not see the little plants, the little birds, the ants, the spiders, the bees working together to put in order their own particular corners of the universe? And are you unwilling to do the work of a human being? And do you not make haste to do that which is your very nature to do? But it is necessary to take rest also. It is necessary. However, nature has fixed bounds to this too. She has fixed bounds both to eating and drinking, and yet you go beyond these bounds, beyond what is sufficient. By contrast, in your actions you stop short of what you can do. All this goes to show that you do not love yourself, or if you did, you would love your nature and her will. Those who love their own art, they exhaust themselves in working at them, without washing, without food. But you value your own nature less than the turner values the turning art, or the dancer the dancing art, or the lover of money values his money, or the vainglorious man his little glory. And such men, when they have a violent affection for a thing, choose neither to eat nor sleep in order to perfect the things which they care for. But are the actions that concern society as a whole more vile in your eyes and less worthy of your labour? How easy it is to repel and to wipe away every impression which is troublesome or unsuitable, and immediately to be in complete tranquillity. Judge every word and deed that is in accordance with nature to be fit for you, and do not be diverted by the blame or comments from others that follows from it. But if a thing is good to be done or said, do not consider it unworthy of you, for those persons are directed by their own principles and follow their particular feelings and volitions. Do not pay them any regard, but go straight on, following your own nature and the nature common to all. Both of these go by one single way. I pass through the experience meted out by nature until I shall fall and rest, breathing out my breath into that element out of which I daily draw it in, and falling upon that earth from which my father got his seed, and my mother her blood, and my nurse her milk, from which, during so many years, I have been supplied with food and drink, and which bears me when I tread on it and abuse it in so many ways. You say, men cannot admire the sharpness of my wits. Be it so, but there are many other qualities of which you cannot say, nature has not given them form in me. Show those qualities, then, which are altogether in your power, sincerity, gravity, the ability to work hard and to put aside pleasure, contentment with what you have, being happy with few things, benevolence, frankness, no love of superfluous tattle, magnanimity. Do you not see how many qualities you are immediately able to exhibit, in which there is no excuse of natural incapacity and unfitness, and yet you still remain voluntarily below the mark? Or are you compelled, through being defectively furnished by nature, to moan and to be stingy and to flatter, and to find fault with your poor body, and to try to please people, and to make great display of doing things, and to be so anxiety-ridden? No, by the gods, but you might have been delivered from these things long ago. Only if in truth you can be charged with being rather slow and dull of comprehension, you must exert yourself about this also, not neglecting it, nor yet taking pleasure in your dullness. One man, when he has done a service to another, is ready to set it down to his account as a favour conferred. Another is not ready to do this, but still in his own mind he thinks of the man as his debtor, and he knows what he has done. A third, in a way, does not even know what he has done, but he is like a vine which has produced grapes, and seeks for nothing more once it has produced its own fruit. As a horse when he has run, a dog when he has tracked the game, a bee when it has made the honey, so a man when he has done a good act does not call out for others to come and see, but he goes on to another act, as a vine goes on to produce again the grapes in season. Must a man then be one of these who act in this sort of way without looking at what he has done? Yes. But this very thing is necessary, the observation of what a man is doing, for it may be said it is characteristic of the social animal to perceive that he is working in a social manner, and indeed to wish that his social partner also should perceive it. Well, it is true what you say, but you do not quite understand what is being said, and for this reason you will become one of those who mark up favours of whom I spoke before. For even they are misled by a certain show of reason. But if you will choose to understand the meaning of what is said, do not fear that for this reason you will omit any action of social benefit. A Prayer of the Athenians. Rain, rain, O dear Zeus, down on the ploughed fields of the Athenians and on the plains. In truth, we ought not to pray at all, or if we do, we ought to pray in this simple and noble fashion. Just as we must understand when it is said that Aesculapius prescribed to this man horse exercise, or bathing in cold water, or going without shoes, so we must understand it when it is said that the nature of the universe prescribed to this man disease or mutilation or loss or anything else of the kind. For in the first case, prescribed means something like this. He prescribed this for this man as a thing adapted to procure health. And in the second case, it means that which happens to, or suits, every man is fixed for him in a manner suitable to his destiny. For this is what we mean when we say that things are suitable to us. As the workmen say of squared stones in walls or pyramids, that they are suitable when they fit them to one another in some kind of clear-cut connection. For there is altogether one fitness, one harmony, and as the universe is made up out of all bodies to be such a body as it is, so out of all existing causes necessity or destiny is made up to be such a cause as it is. And even those who are completely ignorant understand what I mean, for they say, it, necessity or destiny, brought this to such a person. And if brought, also prescribed to him. Let us then accept these things as if they were prescribed to us, just as we accept what Aesculapius prescribes. Many, as a matter of course, even amongst his prescriptions, are disagreeable, but we accept them in the hope of health. Let the perfecting and accomplishment of the things which the common nature judges to be good be judged by you to be of the same kind as your health, and so accept everything which happens, even if it seems disagreeable, because it leads to this, to the health of the universe, and to the prosperity and felicity of Zeus. For he would not have brought on any man what he has brought, if it were not useful for the universe as a whole. Neither does the nature of anything, whatever it may be, cause anything which is not suitable to that which is directed by it. For two reasons, then, it is right to be content with what happens to you, the one because it was done for you and prescribed for you and in a way had reference to you, originally spun with the thread of your destiny from the most ancient causes, and the other because even that which comes to every individual in particular is to the power which administers the universe a cause of felicity and perfection, even of its very continuance. For the integrity of the whole is mutilated if you cut off anything whatever from the conjunction and the continuity, either of its constituent parts or of its causes. And you do cut off something, as far as it is in your power, when you complain at your situation. Just this is, in a way, damaging to it. Do not be disgusted or discouraged or dissatisfied if you do not succeed in doing everything according to right principles. But when you do fail, return back again and be content if the greater part of what you do is consistent with our true nature, and love this to which you return, and do not return to philosophy as if she were a master, but act like someone with painful eyes who applies a bit of sponge and egg, or as another applies a plaster or a lotion. For thus you will not fail to obey reason, and you will find rest in it. And remember that philosophy requires only the things which your true nature requires, but you would have something else which is not according to your true nature. It may be objected, why, what is more agreeable than this which I am doing? Is this not the very way pleasure deceives us? But consider the ways in which magnanimity, freedom, simplicity, equanimity, piety are more agreeable. For what is more agreeable than wisdom itself, when you think of the security and the happy course of all things that depend on the faculty of understanding and knowledge? Things in their reality are so enveloped and hidden that they have seemed to philosophers, and not a few of them, nor common philosophers, altogether unintelligible. Even to the Stoics themselves they seem difficult to understand. And all the assent we give to what we take in is changeable, for where is the man who never changes? Take your thoughts, then, to the objects themselves, and consider how short-lived they are and worthless, and that they may be in the possession of a catamite, or a whore, or a robber. Then turn to the morals of those amongst whom you live, and it is hardly possible to endure even the most agreeable of them, to say nothing of being hardly able to endure oneself. In such darkness, then, and dirt, and in so constant a flux, both of substance and of time, and of motion and of things moved, what there is worth prizing very highly, or even making an object of serious pursuit, I cannot imagine. But, on the contrary, it is a man's duty to comfort himself and to wait for the natural dissolution, and not to be vexed at the delay, but to rest in these principles only. The one, that nothing will happen to me which is not conformable to the nature of the universe, and the other, that it is in my power never to act contrary to my God and guardian spirit. For there is no man who will compel me to this. About what am I now employing my own soul? On every occasion I must ask myself this question and inquire, what have I now in this part of me which they call the ruling mind? And what manner of soul do I have now? That of a child, or of a young man, or of a feeble woman, or of a tyrant, or of a domestic animal, or of a wild beast? Here is how we may learn what kind of things most people will regard as good things. If someone were to conceive certain things as being really good, such as prudence, temperance, justice, fortitude, he would not, with a consciousness of these qualities, put up with listening to the popular saying, "Too many goods to make room," because it will not make sense in those terms. But if a man has first conceived as good the things that appear to most people to be good, he will listen and readily receive as very applicable that which was said by the comic writer. Thus even the majority of people have some sense of the difference. Were it not so, this saying would not offend and be rejected in the first place, whilst we accept it for an apposite and witty remark on the subject of wealth and the rewards of luxury and fame. Go on, then, and ask if we should value and think those things to be good, to which, after their first conception, in the mind of the words of the comic writer might be aptly applied, that he who has them, through pure abundance, has no room to shit. I am composed of the formal and the material, and neither of them will perish into non-existence, as neither of them came into existence out of non-existence. Every part of me, then, will be reduced by change into some part of the universe, and that again will change into another part of the universe, and so on forever. And by consequence of such a change, I too exist. and those who begot me, and so on for ever in the other direction. Nothing hinders us from saying this, even if the universe is administered according to appointed cycles of change. Reason and the reasoning art are self-defining powers, sufficient for themselves and for their own works. They move from an apt first principle, and they make their way to the end that is proposed to them. And this is the reason why such acts are named right acts, which word signifies that they proceed by the right road. None of these things ought to be called a man's, which do not belong to a man as a human being. They are not required of a man, nor does man's nature promise them, nor are they the means of man's nature attaining its end. Neither then does the end of man lie in these things, nor yet that which aids to the accomplishment of this end, and that which aids towards this end is that which is good. Besides, if any of these things did belong to man, it would not be right for a man to despise them and to set himself against them. Nor would a man be worthy of praise who showed that he did not want these things, nor would he who stinted himself in any of them be good, if indeed these things were good. But in fact, the more of these things a man deprives himself of, or of other things like them, or when he is deprived of any of them, the more patiently he endures the loss, in the same degree he is a better man. Such as are your habitual thoughts, such also will be the character of your mind. For the soul is dyed by thoughts. Dye it then with a continuous series of such thoughts as these. For instance, that where a man can live, there he can also live a good life. If he must live in a palace, well then he can also live a good life in a palace. Again, consider that each thing has been constituted for some purpose beyond itself, and towards this it is carried, and its end is in that towards which it is carried, and where the end is, there also is the advantage and the good of each thing. Now the good for the reasonable animal is society, community. For that we are made for society has been shown above. Is it not plain that the inferior exist for the sake of the superior? The things that have life are superior to those that do not have life, and of those that have life the superior are those that have reason. To seek what is impossible is madness, and it is impossible that the bad should not act according to how they are. Nothing happens to any man which he is not formed by nature to bear. What happens to you happened to another, and either because he does not see that they have happened, or because he would show a great spirit, he is firm and remains unperturbed. It is a shame, then, that ignorance and conceit should be stronger than wisdom. Things themselves do not touch the soul, not in the least degree, nor have they admission to the soul, nor can they turn or move the soul. But the soul turns and moves itself alone, and it consolidates the things that present themselves to it with whatever judgments it may think proper to make of those things. In one respect, man is the nearest thing to me, insofar as I must do good to men and endure them. But insofar as some people make themselves obstacles to my own business, man becomes one of the things that are indifferent to me, no less than the sun or wind or a wild beast. Now it is true that these may impede my action, but they are no impediments to my volition and disposition, which have the power of acting conditionally and changing. For the mind converts and changes every hindrance to its activity into an aid, and so that which is a hindrance to some activity is made a furtherance to it, and that which is an obstacle on the road helps us on this road. Reverence that which is best in the universe. This is what makes use of all things and directs all things, and likewise reverence that which is best in yourself. This is of the same kind as that, for in yourself also That which makes use of everything else is this, and your life is directed by this. That which does no harm to the state does no harm to the citizen. In the case of every appearance of harm, apply this rule. If the state is not harmed by this, neither am I harmed. If, on the other hand, the state is harmed, you must not be angry with him who does harm to the state, but show him where his error is. Think often about the rapidity with which things pass by and disappear, both the things which are and the things which are produced. For substance is like a river in a continual flow, and the activities of things are in constant change, and the causes work in infinite varieties, and there is hardly anything which stands still. And consider this which is near to you, this boundless abyss of the past and of the future, in which all things disappear. How then is he not a fool, who is puffed up with such things or plagued about them, and makes himself miserable? For they vex him only for a time, and a short time. Think of the whole substance of the universe, of which you have a very small portion, and of the whole of time, of which a short and indivisible interval has been assigned to you, and of that which is fixed by destiny, and how small a part of it you are. Does another do me wrong? Let him look to it himself. He has his own disposition, his own activity. I now have what the universal nature wills me to have, and I do what my own nature now wills me to do. Let the part of your soul that leads and governs be undisturbed by the movements of the flesh, whether of pleasure or of pain, and let it not lose itself in them, but let it circumscribe itself and limit those feelings to the parts they affect. But when these feelings rise up to the mind by virtue of that reverse flow of sympathy that naturally exists in a body, which is a unity, then you must not strive to resist the sensation, for it is natural. But let not the ruling part of itself add to the sensation any judgment that it is either good or bad. Live with the gods. And he does live with the gods, who constantly shows to them that his own soul is at ease with what is assigned to him, and that it fulfills all the wishes of the guardian spirit that Zeus has given as a portion of himself to every man for his guardian and guide. And this is every man's understanding and reason. Are you angry with him whose armpits stink? Are you angry with him whose breath smells foul? What do you expect of him? He has such a mouth, he has such armpits. It is necessary that such an emanation must come from such things. But the man has reason, it will be said, and he is able, if he makes some effort, to discover where he causes offence. I wish you well of your discovery. Here you have reason. By your rational faculty, stir up his rational faculty. Show him his error, admonish him. If he listens, you will cure him, and there is no need of anger. As they say, where there are neither declaiming actors nor whores. But why so? As you intend to live when you leave the world, so it is in your power to live while you are in it. If you are not permitted to do so, then get away out of life, yet in such a way as if you suffered no harm by it. The house is smoky, and I quit it. Why do you think that this is any problem? But so long as nothing of the kind drives me out, I remain a free individual, and no man shall hinder me from doing what I choose. And I choose to do what is according to the nature of the rational and social animal. The intelligence of the universe is social. Accordingly, it has made the inferior things for the sake of the superior, and it has placed the superior in harmony with one another. You see how it has subordinated some creatures, coordinated others, and assigned to everything its proper portion, and has brought together the superior beings into concord with one another. How have you behaved hitherto to the gods, to your parents, brethren, children, teachers, to those who looked after your infancy, to your friends, kinsfolk, to your slaves? Consider if you have hitherto behaved to all in such a way that this may be said of you, that you never wronged a man in deed or word, and call to recollection how many things you have lived through and been able to endure, and that the history of your life is now complete and your service is ended. How much have you seen beauty? How many pleasures and pains have you disregarded? How much honour and glory have you spurned? And to how many unkind folk have you shown kindness? Why do unskilled and ignorant minds disturb him who has skill and knowledge? Well, what is the mind that has skill and knowledge? It is the mind that knows beginning and end, and knows the reason which pervades the world and administers the universe through all time by fixed periods or cycles. Soon, very soon, you will be ashes, or a skeleton, just a name, or not even a name, and any such name is but sound and echo, and the things which are much valued in life are empty and rotten and trifling, and like little dogs biting one another, and little children quarrelling, laughing, and then straightway weeping. But fidelity and modesty and justice and truth are fled, up to Olympus from the wide-spread earth. What then is there that still detains you here? If the objects of sense are always changing and never stand still, and the organs of perception are dull and easily receive false impressions, and the poor soul itself is an exhalation from blood, and if to have good repute amid such a world as this is an empty thing, why then do you not wait in tranquillity for your end, whether it is extinction or removal to another state? And until that time comes, what is required? Why? What else than to venerate the gods and bless them, and to do good to men, and to practice tolerance and self-restraint? But as to everything which is beyond the limits of our poor flesh and breath, to remember that this is neither your own nor in your power. You can pass your life in an equable flow of happiness if you can go by the right way and think and act in the right way. These two things are common both to the soul of God and to the soul of man, and to the soul of every rational being, that they are not subject to external impositions, and to hold good to consist in the disposition to justice and the practice of it, and in this to let your desire find its termination. If this is neither my own ill-doing, nor an effect of my own ill-doing, and the common good is not injured, why am I troubled about it? And what is the harm to the common good? Do not be carried along indiscriminately by what may come across in some people as a great loss, but give help to all according to your ability and their deserving, even if they should have sustained loss in matters which are indifferent. On the other hand, do not take such a felt loss to be necessarily a real loss, which is a bad habit of thinking. But just as the old man in the play, when he leaves, asks for the return of his foster child's top, whilst remembering that it is merely a top, so also should you in this case. When you are crying out to the people on your public platform, "Have you forgotten, man, what these things are worth?" Oh, yes, but they are objects of great concern to these people. Will you then be made a fool as well? "I was once a fortunate man, but I lost it I know not how." But good fortune is something you assign yourself, and a good fortune is a good disposition of the soul, good emotional responses, good actions. Book 6. The substance of the universe is obedient and compliant, and the reason which governs it has in itself no cause for doing evil, for it has no malice, nor does it do evil to anything, nor is anything harmed by it. But all things are made and perfected according to this reason. So long as you are doing your duty, let it make no difference to you whether you are cold or warm, nor whether you are drowsy or satisfied with sleep, nor whether ill spoken of or praised, nor whether dying or doing something else. For this act by which we die is still one of the acts of life. It is sufficient then in this act also if we can do well what we have before us. Look within. Do not let the particular quality or value of anything escape you. All existing things soon change, and they will either be reduced to vapor, if indeed all material experience is one, or they will be dispersed into atoms. The governing reason knows what its own disposition is, and what it does, and on what material it works. The best way of avenging yourself is not to become like the wrongdoer. Find your pleasure and rest in one thing, to pass from one social act to another social act, thinking of God. The ruling principle of the mind is that which rouses and turns itself, and while it makes itself such as it is and such as it wills to be, it also makes everything that happens appear to itself to be such as it wills. Every single thing is accomplished in conformity to the nature of the universe, for certainly it is not in conformity to any other nature that each thing is accomplished, either a nature which externally comprehends this, or a nature which is comprehended within this nature, or a nature external and independent of this. The universe is either a confusion and a complex network of things, and a dispersion into atoms, or it is unity and order and providence. If then it is the former, why do I desire to tarry in a fortuitous combination of things and such a disorder? And why do I care about anything other than how I shall at last become earth? And why am I disturbed? For the dispersion of my elements will happen whatever I do. But if the other supposition is true, I venerate and I am firm, and I trust in him who governs. When circumstances drive you into some kind of disturbed state, quickly return to yourself, and do not continue out of tune longer than the compulsion lasts, for you will have more mastery over the harmony by continually recurring to it. If you had a stepmother and a mother at the same time, you would be dutiful to your stepmother, but still you would constantly return to your mother. Let the court and philosophy now be to you stepmother and mother. Return to philosophy frequently and take your rest in her. Thereby what you are faced with in the court will appear to you tolerable, and you will appear tolerable in the court. When we have meat before us and other eatables, it is a good idea to take in, as a felt impression, the knowledge that this is the dead body of a fish, and this is the dead body of a bird or of a pig, and again that this Falernian wine is only a little grape juice, and this purple robe some sheep's wool dyed with the blood of a shellfish, and in the carnal act that it is no more than the rubbing of a membrane and an emission of mucus. Such felt knowledge reaches well to the core of a thing, and to penetrate through it, to see what kind of thing it is. Just in the same way ought we to act all through life, and where there are things which appear most worthy of our approbation, we ought to lay them bare and look at their worthlessness and strip them of all the words by which they are exalted. For outward show is a wonderful perverter of the reason. And when you are most sure that you are employed about things worth doing, it is then that it cheats you most. Consider, for example, what Crates said of Xenocrates himself. Most of the things which the multitude admire may be classed as objects of the most general kind, held together by cohesion, such as stones or wood, or natural organization like fig trees, vines, olives. Those that are admired by men who are a little more reasonable come under the heading of things which are held together by a living principle, as flocks or herds. Those which are admired by men who are still more instructed are the things which are held together by a rational soul. Not, however, a universal soul, but rational so far as it is a soul skilled in some art, or expert in some other way, but one who values the rational nature of the soul, a soul universal and fitted for political life, regards nothing else except this, and above all things he keeps his soul in a condition and in an activity conformable to reason and social life, and he cooperates to this end with those who are of the same kind as himself. Some things are hurrying into existence, and others are hurrying out of it. And of that which is coming into existence, part is already extinguished. Motions and changes are continually renewing the world, just as the uninterrupted course of time is always renewing the infinite duration of ages. In this flowing stream, then, on which there is no abiding, what is there of the things which hurry by, on which a man would set a high price? It would be just as if a man should fall in love with one of the sparrows which fly by, but it has already passed out of sight. Something of this kind is the very life of every man, like the exhalation of vapour from the blood and the respiration of the air. For such as it is to have once drawn in the air and to have given it back, which we do every moment, just the same is it with the whole power of breathing, which you received at your birth but yesterday or the day before, and which you must give back to the element from which you first drew it. Neither transpiration, as in plants, nor respiration, as in domesticated animals and wild beasts, is a thing to be valued, nor is the receiving of sense impressions, nor being pulled about by desires as puppets by strings, nor assembling in herds, nor being nourished by food, which is no more to be valued than the act of eliminating the useless part of our food. What, then, is to be valued? To be received with clapping of hands? No. Neither must we value the clapping of tongues, for the praise which comes from the public is just that, a clapping of tongues. Suppose, then, that you have given up this worthless thing called fame. What remains that is of value? It is, in my opinion, to move or to restrain yourself in conformity with your own constitution, to which end all employments and arts lead. For every art aims at this, that the thing which has been made should be adapted to the work for which it has been made. And both the vine planter who looks after the vine, and the horse breaker, and he who trains the dog, seek this end. And then what is the aim to which the education and the teaching of youth aspires? So if this sense of true value is well established, you will not seek anything else. Will you not then cease valuing a mass of other things as well? The alternative is not to be free, nor sufficient in your own happiness, nor dispassionate. You will needs be envious, jealous, and suspicious of those who can take away those things, and plot against those who have that which you value. Of necessity, a man must be altogether in a state of perturbation who wants any of these things, besides which he must often find fault with the gods. But to reverence and honour your own mind will make you content with yourself, and in harmony with society, and in agreement with the gods, that is, praising all that they give and have ordered. Above, below, all around are the movements of the elements. But the motion of virtue is in none of these. It is something more divine and advancing by a way hardly observed, it goes happily on its road. How strangely men act! They will not praise their contemporaries and neighbours, but to be themselves praised by posterity, by those whom they have never seen or ever will see, this they set much value on. But this is very much the same as if you were to be grieved because those who have lived before you fail to praise you. If a thing is difficult for you to accomplish, do not assume that it must be impossible for anyone at all. But bear in mind that if a thing is humanly achievable and conformable to his nature, that this can be attained by yourself as well. In a bout at the gymnasium, suppose that a man has caught you with his nails, or by a clash of heads has inflicted a wound. Well, we neither show signs of vexation, nor are we offended, nor do we suspect him afterwards as a treacherous fellow. And yet we are on our guard against him, not as an enemy, nor yet with suspicion, but we quietly get out of his way. Something like this let your behaviour be in all the other parts of life. Let us overlook many things in those who are like antagonists in the gymnasium. For it is in our power, as I said, to get out of the way, and to have no suspicion nor hatred. If any man is able to convince me and show me that I do not think or act right, I will gladly change, for I seek the truth by which no man was ever injured. The injury is in abiding in one's error and ignorance. I do my duty. Other things trouble me not, for they are either things without life or things without reason, or things that have taken the wrong way and know not the right way. As to animals which have no reason, since you have reason and they have none, make use of them, and in general all things and objects, with a generous and liberal spirit. Towards human beings, as they do have reason, behave in a social spirit, and on all occasions call on the gods, and do not perplex yourself about the length of time that you shall have for this, for even 3 hours so spent are sufficient. Alexander the Macedonian and his groom were brought by death to the same state, for either they were received among the same seminal principles of the universe, or they were alike dispersed into atoms. Consider how many things in the same indivisible moment of time take place in each of us, things which concern the body and things which concern the soul. And so you will not wonder if many more things, or rather all things that come into existence, exist at the same time in that which is the one and all, which we call the cosmos. If any man should propose to you the question, how the name Antoninus is written, would you utter each letter with a hoarse roar? What then if they grow angry? Will you be angry too? Will you not rather run through the sequence of letters with composure? Just so then, in this life, also remember that every duty is made up of various actions. These it is your duty to observe, and without being disturbed, or showing anger towards those who are angry with you, to go on your way and finish that which is set before you. How cruel it is not to allow men to strive after the things which appear to them to be in their own interests and profitable to them. And yet in a way you do not allow them to do this when you are vexed because they do wrong. For they are certainly moved towards things because they suppose them to be in their own interests and profitable to them. But it is not so. Teach them, then, and show them without being angry. Death is a relief from sense impressions, from the pulling of the strings that move the appetites, from the discursive movements of the thoughts, and from service to the flesh. It is shameful for the soul to be first to give way in this life, when your body does not give way. Take care that you are not made into a Caesar, that you are not dyed with this dye, for such things happen. Keep yourself then simple, good, pure, serious, free from affectation, a friend of justice, a worshipper of the gods, kind, affectionate, strenuous in all your proper work. Strive to continue to be such as philosophy wished to make you. Reverence the gods and help men. Life is short. There is only one fruit of this earthly life, a pious disposition and social action. Do everything as a disciple of Antoninus. Remember his constancy in every act which was conformable to reason, and his evenness in all things, and his piety, and the serenity of his countenance, and his sweetness, and his disregard of empty fame, and his efforts to understand things, and how he would never let anything pass without having first most carefully examined it and clearly understood it. And how he put up with those who blamed him unjustly without blaming them in return. How he did nothing in a hurry, and how he did not listen to tittle-tattle, and how exact a judge of people's manners and actions he was, and not given to criticizing people, nor timid, nor suspicious, nor pretentious, and with how little he was satisfied in matters of lodging, bed, dress, food, servants, and how hard-working and patient, and how he was able to keep going until the evening, on account of his sparing diet, not even requiring to relieve himself by any evacuations except at the usual hour, and his loyalty and consistency in his friendships, and how he gave full freedom of speech to those who opposed his opinions, and his pleasure in being put right, and how religious he was, without being superstitious. Imitate all this, that you may have as good a conscience when your last hour comes, as he had. Return to sobriety, and come back to yourself. And when you have roused yourself from sleep, and have perceived that they were only dreams which troubled you, now in your waking hours, look at these things about you as you would a dream. I consist of a little body and a soul. Now to this little body all things are indifferent, for it is not able to perceive differences. But to the understanding those things only are indifferent, which are not the works of its own activity. And the works of its own activity are in its power, though of these only those which are done with reference to the present. As to the future and the past activities of the mind, these are also for the present indifferent. Neither the labour which the hand does nor that which the foot does is contrary to nature, so long as the foot does the foot's work and the hand the hand's. In the same way, to a man as a man, the pain of his labour is not contrary to nature, so long as he does the labour of a man. And if the labour is not contrary to his nature, neither is it an evil to him. As for pleasure, how many pleasures have been enjoyed by robbers, catamites, patricides, tyrants? Do you not see how handy craftsmen will accommodate themselves up to a certain point to their clients, who are not skilled in their craft? Nevertheless, they cling to the reason, the principles of their art, and do not endure to depart from it. Is it not strange if the architect and the physician shall have more respect to the reason or principles of their own arts than man to his own reason or ruling power, which he holds in common with the gods? Asia, Europe, are minute corners of the universe. All the seas but a drop in the universe. Mount Athos but a little clod of the universe. All the present time is a single point in eternity. All things are little, changeable, perishable. All things come from thence, from that universal ruling power, either directly proceeding or by way of sequence. And accordingly the lion's gaping jaws, and that which is poisonous, and every harmful thing, as a thorn, as mud, are after-products of the grand and beautiful. Do not then imagine that they are of another kind from what you venerate, but take a properly considered view of the source of all. He who has seen the things of the present has seen all things, both everything that has taken place from all eternity and everything which will be for time without end. For all things are kindred and of one form. Frequently consider the connection of all things in the universe and their relation to one another. For in a manner all things are implicated with one another, and all in this way are friendly to one another. For one thing comes in order after another, and this is by virtue of the active movement and mutual conspiration and the unity of the substance of things. Adapt yourself to the things amongst which your lot has been cast, and love those people amongst whom you have been placed by fate, but do it truly, sincerely. Every instrument, tool, vessel, if it does the thing for which it has been made, is good, and yet he who made it is not necessary to that good functioning. But in the things which are held together by nature, there is within and there abides in them the power which made them, and therefore it is all the more fitting to reverence this power, and to think that, if you do live and act according to its will, everything in you is in conformity to intelligence. And thus also in the universe the things which belong to it are in conformity to intelligence. Whatever you shall suppose to be good or evil for you amongst the things that are not within your control, it must of necessity be that, if such a bad thing befall you, or the loss of such a good thing, you will blame the gods, and hate men too, those who are the cause of the misfortune or the loss, or those who are suspected of being likely to be the cause. And indeed we do much injustice in our need to make such links. But if we judge only those things which are in our own power to be good or bad, there remains no reason either for finding fault with a god or putting on a hostile attitude to a man. We are all working together to one end, some with knowledge and design, and others without knowing what they do, like people when they are asleep, of whom it is Heraclitus, I think, who says that they too are labourers and co-operators in the things which take place in the universe. But people cooperate in their own very different ways, and even those who find fault with what happens, and those who try to oppose it and to hinder it, cooperate abundantly. For the universe has need even of such men as these. It remains then for you to determine what kind of workmen you place yourself amongst. For he who rules all things will certainly make a proper use of you, and he will admit you into some section of the labour force, whose work together conduce to one end. Only avoid such a part as that of the mean and ridiculous verse in the comedy, which Creusippus speaks of. Does the sun undertake to do the work of the rain, or Aesculapius the work of the fruit-bearer, the earth? And how is it with respect to each of the stars? Are they not different, and yet they work together to the same end? If the gods have given consideration to me and to the things that must happen to me, they will have considered for my benefit, for it is not easy even to imagine a deity without forethought. And as to doing me harm, why should they have any desire towards that? For what advantage would result from this, whether to themselves or to the general good, which is the special object of their providence? If they have not given me individual consideration, they have certainly considered the general good at least, and inasmuch as the things which happen to me are consequent upon this general arrangement, I ought to accept them with pleasure, and be content with them. But if the gods give consideration to nothing, which it is wicked to believe, and if we do believe it, let us neither sacrifice nor pray nor swear by them, nor do anything else which we do as if the gods were present and lived with us. But if the gods do consider none of the things which concern us, I can at least take consideration for myself, and I shall look to that which is most useful, and that is most useful to a man which is conformable to his own constitution and nature. And my nature is rational and social. So far as I am Antoninus, my city and country is Rome. So far as I am a man, it is the world. The things, then, which are useful to these cities are alone useful to me. Whatever happens to the individual person is good for the universe as a whole. This is apparent enough. But if you observe further, you will observe this also as a general truth, that whatever is profitable to the individual is profitable also to others. Though the word profitable should be taken here in its common meaning, as applied to things that are what we should call indifferent. As it happens to you in the amphitheatre and such places, that the continual sight of the same things and the general uniformity of the spectacle becomes wearisome, so it is in the whole of life. For all things above, below, are the same and come from the same conditions. How much longer, then? Be continually mindful of all the kinds of men and of all kinds of pursuits and of all nations that are now dead, till your thoughts come down even to Philistion and Phoebus and Origanion. Now turn your thoughts to the other kinds of men. To that place, then, we too must remove, where there are so many great orators and so many noble philosophers, Heraclitus, Pythagoras, Socrates, so many heroes of former days, and so many generals after them, and kings. Besides these, Eudoxus, Hipparchus, Archimedes, and other men of acute natural talents, great minds, men who love their work, together with rascals and prigs, and even those who mock the perishable and ephemeral life of man, like Menippus and so on. As to all of these, consider that they have long been in the dust. And what harm is this to them, or to those whose names are altogether unknown? One thing here is worth a great deal, to pass your life in truth and justice, with a benevolent disposition even to liars and unjust men. When you wish to delight yourself, think of the virtues of those who live with you. For instance, the ceaseless activity of one, the modesty of another, the liberality of a third, and some other good quality of a fourth, for nothing delights so much as the exemplification of the virtues when they are exhibited in the morals of those who live with us, and the more abundantly they present themselves, so much the better. So keep these examples before you. You are not dissatisfied, I suppose, because you weigh only so many pounds and not 300. Do not be dissatisfied, then, that you must live only so many years and not more, for as much as you are satisfied with the amount of substantial matter that has been assigned to you, likewise be content with the time. Do what you can to persuade. If people remain unpersuaded, act anyway when the principles of justice lead that way. If, however, someone using force stands in your way, then change direction, be content and tranquil, and employ the hindrance towards the exercise of some other virtue. Remember that your effort was always subject to conditions, that you did not imagine you could do the impossible. What, then, did you look for? A purpose qualified by conditions. And this object you have attained. What was proposed is accomplished. What is your own true good? He who loves fame considers it to lie in another man's reactions, and he who loves pleasure his own sensations. But he who has understanding considers his own acts to be his own good. It is in our power to have no opinion about a thing and not to be disturbed in our soul, for things in themselves have no natural power to form our judgments. Accustom yourself to attend carefully to what is said by another, and as much as it is possible, enter into the speaker's mind. That which is not good for the swarm, neither is it good for the bee. If sailors abused the helmsman or the sick the doctor, is there anybody else they would listen to? How else could the helmsman secure the safety of those in the ship, or the doctor the health of those whom he attends? How many with whom I came into the world are already gone out of it? Appearances. To the jaundiced, honey tastes bitter, and to those bitten by mad dogs, water causes fear, and to little children, a ball is a fine thing. Why, then, am I angry? Do you think that a false opinion has less power than the bile in the jaundiced, or the poison in him who is bitten by a mad dog? No one will hinder you from living according to the reason of your own nature. Nothing will happen to you contrary to the reason of universal nature. What kind of people are they whom men wish to please, and for what objects, and by what kinds of actions? How soon will time cover all things, and how many things it has covered already? Book 7. What is evil? It is that which you have often seen, and in the face of any and every occasion keep this in mind, that it is what you have often seen before. Everywhere up and down you will find the same things with which the old histories are filled, those of ancient times and those of our own day. Cities and houses are filled with them, even now. There is nothing new. All things are familiar, all things are short-lived. How can our living principles become deadened unless the mental impressions which correspond to them are extinguished? But it is in your power continuously to fan these thoughts into a flame. I can form for myself the judgment I ought to have of anything that comes to my attention, and if this is so, why am I disturbed? Things external to my mind have no necessary impact upon it at all. Let this be your state of mind, and you stand upright. To recover your life is in your power. Look at things again as you used to look at them, for in this consists the recovery of your life. The idle swank of a parade, plays on the stage, flocks of sheep, herds of cows, mock fighting, a bone thrown to little dogs, bits of bread cast into fish ponds, ants labouring and burden carrying, frightened little mice running about, puppets pulled by strings. In the midst of all such things, your duty is to show good humour and not a superior air. To understand, however, that every man is worth just so much as the things about which he busies himself are worth. In discourse you must attend to what is said, and in every movement you must observe what is going on. In the latter case you should watch carefully the meaning of what is being said. In the former case, see immediately to what end that movement refers. Is my understanding sufficient for this or not? If it is sufficient, I use it for the work as an instrument given to me by universal nature. But if it is not sufficient, then either I retire from the work and give way to him who is able to do it better, unless there be some reason why I ought not to do so, or I do it as well as I can, taking to help me the man who with the aid of my ruling principle can do what is now fit and useful for the general good. For whatsoever, either by myself or with another, I can do, ought to be directed to this aim only, to that which is useful and well suited to society as a whole. How many, after being celebrated by fame, have been given up to oblivion? And how many who have celebrated the fame of others have long been dead. Be not ashamed to be helped, for it is your business to do your duty like a soldier in the assault on a town. How then, if being lame you cannot mount up on the battlements alone, but with the help of another it is possible? Let not future things disturb you, for you will come to them, if it shall be necessary, having with you the same reason which you now use for present things. All things are implicated with one another, and the bond between them is holy, and there is hardly anything unconnected with any other thing. For things have been coordinated, and they combine to form the same universal order. For there is one universe made up of all things, and one God who pervades all things, and one substance and one law, one common reason in all intelligent animals, and one truth. If indeed there is also one perfection for all such beings participating in the same reason. Everything material soon disappears in the substance of the whole universe, and everything formal or causal is very soon taken back into universal reason, and the memory of everything is very soon overwhelmed in the passing of time. To the rational animal, an act that is according to nature is also according to reason. Be upright or be made upright. Just as it is with the members of an organic or physical body which are united in a single entity, so it is with rational beings which exist separately, but have been constituted for cooperation in a unified endeavour. And the perception of this will be more apparent to you if you regularly say to yourself, I am a member of a single system that is rational humanity. You could, instead of the word member, say part, that you are a part of that single system of rational humanity, but this would suggest that you do not yet love humanity from your heart. Beneficence does not yet delight you for its own sake. You still do it merely as a matter of duty, and not yet out of a concern for your true welfare. Let external events impinge upon those parts of me that must feel the effects of these events. Those parts which have felt will complain if they choose, but I am not injured unless I think that what has happened is an evil, and it is in my power not to think it an evil. Whatever anyone does or says, I must determine to be good, just as if an emerald, or gold, or the colour purple, were always saying, whatever anyone does or says, I must be emerald, I must keep my colour. The ruling faculty, your reason, does not disturb itself. I mean, it does not frighten itself or cause itself pain. If anyone else can frighten or cause it pain, let him do so. But for the faculty itself, it will not by its own judgment turn to such ways. Let the body itself take care, if it can, that it suffer nothing. Let the sensual soul, that which is subject to fear, to pain, speak if it suffers. But that which has completely the power of forming a judgment about these things will suffer nothing, and it will never of itself be driven into a judgment. The leading principle in itself wants nothing, unless it makes a want for itself, and therefore it is both free from perturbation and unimpeded, unless it disturb and impede itself. Eudaimonia, or happiness, is a good guardian spirit, a good thing. What then, my imagination, are you doing here? Go away, I entreat you, by the gods. Take the way you came by. I do not want you. Here you are, come according to your usual fashion. I am not angry with you, only go away. You are afraid of change? Why? What can take place without change? What then is more pleasing or more suitable to universal nature? And can you take a bath unless the wood undergoes a change? And can you be nourished unless the food undergoes a change? And can anything else that is useful be accomplished without change? Do you not see, then, that for yourself also, to change is just the same, and equally necessary for the nature of the universe? Through the universal substance, as through a furious torrent, all bodies are carried, being by their nature united with and cooperating with the whole, as the parts of our body do with one another. How many a Chrysippus, how many a Socrates, how many an Epictetus, has time already swallowed up? And let the same thought arise in you with reference to every man and thing. One thing only troubles me, lest I should do something which the constitution of humanity does not allow, or in a way which it does not allow, or something that it does not allow at present. Fast approaching is the time when you will have forgotten all things. Fast approaching is the time when all things will have forgotten you. It is natural for us to love even those who do wrong, and this happens if, when they do wrong, it occurs to us that they are kindred of the family of mankind, and that they do wrong unintentionally, through ignorance, and that soon both of us will die, and above all, that the wrongdoer has done us no harm, for he has not made our ruling faculty worse than it was before. Universal nature employs the substance of the universe as if it were wax, now moulding a horse, and when it has broken this up, employing the same material for a tree, then for a man, then for something else. And each of these things subsists for a very short time. But it is no hardship for a vessel to be broken up, just as there was none in its being fastened together. A scowling look is altogether unnatural. When it is often assumed, the result is that all comeliness dies away, and at last is so completely extinguished that it cannot be again lighted up at all. Try to conclude from this very fact that such an expression is contrary to reason. If even the perception of doing wrong shall depart, what reason is there for living any longer? Nature, which governs the whole, will soon change all things that you see, and out of their substance will make other things, and again other things from the substance of them, in order that the world may be ever new. When a man has done you any wrong, immediately consider what idea of good or evil has brought him to do wrong. When you have seen this, you will pity him and will neither wonder nor be angry. Either you yourself think the same thing to be good that he does, or at least something similar, in which case it is your duty to pardon him. Or if you do not think such things to be good or evil, you will more readily be well disposed to one who is in error. Think not so much of what you do not have as of what you do have, and of these things which you do have select the best, and then reflect how eagerly they would have been sought if you had not had them. At the same time, however, take care that you do not, through being so pleased with them, accustom yourself to overvalue them, so as to be disturbed if ever you should not have them. Retire into yourself. The rational principle which rules has this nature, that it is content with itself when it does what is just, and so secures tranquillity. Wipe out the fantasizing imagination. Stop the pulling of the strings from idle impulses. Confine yourself to the present. Understand well what is happening, either to you or to another. Distinguish between the causal and the material nature of the event. Think of your last hour. Let the wrong which is done by someone stay there where the wrong was done. Direct your attention to what is said. Let your understanding enter into the things that are being done, and who are doing them. Delight in simplicity and modesty, and in being indifferent towards the things that lie between virtue and vice. Love mankind. Follow God. Democritus says, "All else is subject to the law of convention. Only the elements are absolute and real. But for you it is sufficient to remember that law rules all." About death. Whether it is a dispersion or a resolution into atoms or annihilation, it is either extinction or change. About pain. The pain which is intolerable carries us off, but that which lasts a long time is tolerable, and the mind maintains its own tranquillity by retiring into itself, and the ruling faculty, your reasoning mind, is not itself damaged by pain. As for the parts which are harmed by pain, let them offer their opinion about it if they can. About fame. Look at the minds of those who seek fame. Observe what they are, and what kind of things they avoid, and what kind of things they pursue. And consider that just as drifts of sand piled on one another hide earlier drifts of sand, so in one's life the events which go before are soon covered by those which come after.